This is the Tribe and Dish Podcast.
Part of the 16 Win the Ring Network.
Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
We hadn't even started yet!
To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
Part of what makes him such a good defender is his ability to switch, his ability to contest that three-point shot even when he is 7 feet away from it to run out and close out on the shooter.
Kevin Rayfuse.
If Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double for the season and his team makes the playoffs, I don't know how it can be anyone other than him.
And Justin Kuzite.
I know, I just feel like they got this guy and he's just been injured since. Like, I'm curious to see how they work him into lineups. Like, they've gotten so used to not having him. Like, how do they end up using him?
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now.
Hello, and joining us today, we are actually doing our very first Skype recording, which is really exciting for us here on the Drive and Dish Podcast, because as you guys know, normally when we record, it's Justin, Kevin, and I, and we're all sitting in a room together. But as Kevin alluded to two episodes ago, Justin and I just got brand new mics. Yes. Kevin just got an audio interface for his mic, so now we'll be able to do more of these midweeks and provide you guys with more content than we've been able to.
Tell me something I do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish Podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, we got a whole lot in news today, so let's just jump right into it. The NBA announced the 2017 All-Star Games reserves. The Western Conference, we got Westbrook, Thompson, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Marc Gasol, DeAndre Jordan, and Gordon Hayward. In the East, we got Isaiah Thomas, John Wall, Kevin Love, Kyle Lowry, Paul George, Kemba Walker, and Paul Millsap. DeAndre Jordan, Gordon Hayward, and Kemba Walker are each first-time All-Stars, so congrats to them. Enes Kanter suffered a fractured right forearm after he punched a chair in the second quarter of the OKC win over Dallas. The Knicks are reaching out to the Celtics, Clippers, and Cavs about a Carmelo Anthony trade. Phil Jackson is determined to find a destination that is an ideal place for Anthony and so that he would agree upon the trade. They need to figure something out before February 23rd, which is the NBA deadline. Larry Sanders tweeted the other day, officially stepping back into the game, looking for a good fit, but it shouldn't be long now. I really missed the game. I think it missed me too. So maybe we'll see Larry Sanders suiting up very soon. Also, a bunch going on with the Bulls. Rondo posted a photograph on Instagram of him, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen, along with a very long statement pretty much going in on D-Wade and Jimmy Butler for complaining about all of the losses. You can see that on our Facebook page at Drive-In Dish NBA. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So right now we want to tell you about one of our sponsors, and that is SeatGeek. And SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being at the game for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for a great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit, whether that's courtside, the club seats, or the upper level. Now, I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or really any game this season. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. Now, best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off the first SeatGeek purchase. So what you got to do, try to get that $20 rebate on tickets. Download the SeatGeek app. It's free for iPhones, Androids, and any other phones you may have. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, and when you enter that promo code, enter the promo code DISH, like Drive and Dish NBA Podcast, and SeatGeek is going to send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. I know Tim, Justin, and I have all done that. Seriously, it's the easiest thing in the world, and you get $20 back. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code DISH today.
So joining us today on the line, and I'm really excited about this, is Spencer Davies with 16winsaring.com. He also is with Fox Sports Ohio covering the Cleveland Cavaliers, but that's not the reason why we have Spencer on this episode. The reason why we have Spencer on this episode is because we are going to be talking about the Phoenix Suns, specifically Tyson Chandler. Mr. Spencer, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, and thanks for pronouncing my last name right, because a lot of people don't do that. Oh, okay. A lot of people just go for the Davis and, you know, it's just no paying attention to the E, you know.
Well, I mean, I've been getting Thompkins my entire life, even though there's no H.
I get Cowsart a lot,
and there's no W. There's no W. I don't know where they get that.
Do not know.
On the show, we usually, and we aren't going to do on this episode, Spencer, but we usually like to read one review that somebody leaves us on iTunes, because we all know how important those iTunes reviews are for really climbing up the ranks in the podcast ladder. But I swear every single time we read a review, we butcher whoever's last name it is. But they never correct us on. We never get the tweet.
Yeah, no, never once do we get a tweet about that. But that, I mean, they're probably just more excited that we read the review.
You always got to connect to your fan bases, you know?
So, Spencer, you wrote about Tyson Chandler, and it's kind of an interesting situation. Not an interesting situation over 16WinsOfRing.com where the article is, but it's an interesting situation in Phoenix right now where, you know, they're really rolling out this squad. It's a mix of young players and vets, whether you're talking about Tyson Chandler, Jared Dudley, Barbosa, Eric Bledsoe to a certain extent, and even Brandon Knight's 26 years old. He's no puppy in the league at this point in his career. What made you want to really focus in on Tyson Chandler for your article?
I just think with Tyson, he's just a veteran guy who's been around the block. He's obviously had chances and won championship before. I heard he's a really good interview. Our guy Keith Smith suggested that I talk to him, and you know, with Phoenix, I feel like you could take the route where you talk to the young guy, but I talked to a couple young guys already, so I decided to go a little bit of different route. But I was really happy that I went with Tyson, because He's a good guy, and really the whole Suns organization was great with the whole process, and got to talk to him and Marquise Chris and even Earl Watson one on one at the end. So it was a really good day.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you in general, I guess, you know, talking to the guys, how did they seem? Because I know, I guess the rest of the league always wants to look at the Suns as like, oh man, they're tanking and they're so young and they're trying to figure it out. But at least the vibe I was getting from your article, you seemed like they're really enjoying what they're going through. And Tyson Chandler in general is just really happy to be there as a mentor to these younger guys.
He really is. And I think that's the most impressive part about it, because, you know, you got these guys that are, you know, on the back nine of their career. He's in his 16th season, and You feel like he would want to go ring chasing like somebody like David West or something, but he's there and he's playing like the title of the article says. He's Big Brother, and it's really kind of refreshing to see it, because Marquise Chris really looks up to him. When I was talking to him, he was raving over him and about how he'd pull him aside after practices and really teach him the ropes of the league, just from a preparation standpoint, not even just on the court. And it's cool to see him take him under his wing, and a lot of the other Suns' younger players, too.
Were you a bit surprised that, because when I was reading your article on 16WinsOfRing.com, and you kind of spoke to that, you spoke about how he's mentoring the younger players, and Marquise Chris was the name that came up, and it kind of struck me that it wasn't Alex Len that came up in that mentoring role, because I felt like when the Suns added Tyson Chandler, yes, it was to make that push for LaMarcus Aldridge, but it was also to help mentor, you know, their number four, number five pick or whatever he was a few years back. And Alex Len, were you surprised that it was Marquise Chris who he seems to be taking under his wing a bit more?
You could say that, yeah. This whole situation with Alex Len, I kind of feel bad for the kid, because you don't know whether he's going to get 25 minutes one night or he's going to get 4 minutes the next, you know. And I think that's what's going on in Phoenix, is they don't know what they want to do with that situation. And it's a little tough, probably definitely on Alex. But I know that Tyson Chandler's been having a heck of a year. He's been consistent in his entire career. Like the game he came back after he was out with an illness against the Cavs, he had 22 and 16. I mean, he's still, you know, producing at a high rate and a vocal leader for that team. And it's good for them, because the younger guys, they need a voice. But with Alex, it's just an unfortunate situation for them.
Well, it's really tough for Alex too. You know, he turned down that contract extension at the end of last season, kind of betting on himself. And then if you look at what he's doing this season, is his numbers across the board, especially his field goal percentage and block percentage, they're both really up there now and pretty respectable. So a little bit low on the field goal percentage from the center position, but regardless, he's having kind of a turnaround year for him. And are you surprised at all by the minutes distribution that the Suns are rolling with, where, you know, Tyson Chandler's averaging 28 minutes a game, but Alex Len's only playing?
I am
kind
of surprised, because you feel like they would try to develop that talent. And, you know, in bunches, Alex Len has had some solid games. So you think that maybe they would, you know, even it up a little bit more. But you can really tell that just Earl Watson likes what Tyson Chandler brings to the table, and if it's working and it's getting wins, then do it. It's definitely a tough predicament to be in, though, between the veterans and the younger guys, for sure.
In theory, with any young team that's kind of going through, I guess you could say, a rebuild, is you want the younger guys to get the minutes so that they get the experience. And yeah, playing Chandler isn't going to do that. But also, those younger guys see how he, you know, holds himself on the court. And mm-hmm. I believe there's a lot of teams taking notice to how this situation can go, because Tim says it all the time, every young team needs a good veteran leader in the locker room. I think you had talked about one of the games that the Suns were still in it, but the locker room was like silent, and Tyson Chandler comes in and kind of shows that, hey guys, like this is how we're supposed to do this. We're not supposed to be quiet in timeouts. We're not supposed to be quiet on the court. We're supposed to be hyped up, like we're still in this type stuff.
The game that Earl Watson was alluding to was the one in Utah where it came down to the wire. And his guys fought, and it was a really good game. But they said that they were quiet in the locker room. That's not usually how it goes when Tyson Chandler is around, and he's always, you know, just kind of giving everybody an up, you know, like just some sort of confidence, and it's huge.
One of those things that having been to a number of Suns games in my past is that in watching Tyson Chandler, something that the cameras don't really pick up, but Tyson Chandler is often the player on the bench, and of course Alan Williams as well, but he's the most vocal player on the bench, standing up, cheering on his teammates and that kind of thing. So there's a lot to be said for a player like that who looks engaged when they're on the bench and not just when they're in game. One of the quotes that really caught my attention in your article, Spencer, was Tyson Chandler. He said, "We tend to focus on the big things, our numbers, and how we can figure out the highest scorer out there and all that kind of stuff, but the game is so much bigger than that." What did you take away from that comment from him?
I think just paying attention to the details, and he's completely right. A lot of people do just look at the numbers and don't look about the ins and outs of basketball. It's very refreshing to see that he's teaching these guys these things, because, you know, when you are younger, you probably are looking out for your own numbers and trying to play well so you can earn a big contract. But if you pay attention to the little things and the details, that's going to take you a long way, and then you're going to be able to pass that down to the next generation in some point. So I think that's really refreshing to hear from Tyson, especially because when he was younger, he probably wasn't, you know, learning that stuff. Like he said to me, he wishes that he had somebody like what he's doing with the younger guys now to teach him.
Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's such a good situation for him to be doing that. And it's surprising, because the thought behind every player is, oh, they want to win a ring, they got to go now. And like you had talked about earlier in this podcast, David West is just chasing a ring, or always seems like he's chasing a ring, where Chandler's like, look, I'm good being here. I'm shaping and molding the next gen basketball players.
Legitimately enjoying it, too. It's just not, that's not media talk. Like when I'm talking to him, this guy is literally, he's really loving what he's doing. And I mean, why wouldn't he? I mean, he's already gotten a ring. I mean, it's just it's not like necessary to complete his career, so to speak. He's just enjoying being that guy to teach. And the guys are soaking it up, like Marquise and like Devin Booker. You mentioned Devin Booker in the article, too. And
one of the things about Devin Booker this season that's, that maybe a lot of people hadn't noticed is how much Devin Booker has improved his strength and how he's able to fight through some of those defensive possessions, especially when the defenses are really honing in on him. Speaking with Tyson Chandler, how did he seem to feel about Devin Booker really being the not the leader on the team? That's really not what I'm trying to go for, but as much as being able to carry the team night to night on the offensive end, to where it's not just points and it's not just stats, but it's actually translating into wins for
the organization. Called him a special player. It's against the Knicks. Close it out, hits a big three, you know. It's just about growing as a player. I mean, he's only 20 years old. There's a very bright future for Devin Booker, and he's already showing. I mean, what his points per game is like over 20 this year. He averaged 14 last year, and he's been asked to step right next to Eric Bledsoe, and he's just flourishing. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You could probably pick things up a little bit more on the defensive end, but, I mean, that's going to come with experience.
To your defensive end, Bush, just a little side story. One day I woke up and I was at work and I was like, you know what? I'm going to be a hater today. And so I found Booker had a great night, like 39 points or something like that, but was really bad on the defensive end in terms of defensive efficiency. So I posted that stat, and then I put the GIF from Space Jam, I think it was, where Bill Murray goes, whoa, 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 no, I don't play defense. And I posted it to Suns Reddit and got absolutely roasted.
I'm sure you got destroyed for that.
Suns fans don't like it when you make fun of their young Devin Booker, that is for sure. But it's definitely good to see that Tyson Chandler, you know, he alludes to the fact that Booker knows that he's working on his strength, and Chandler's helping him in that aspect.
And again, it's just taking on that mentorship role. You just said all he's got to do is just mature, you know, and again, he's 20 years old. Like, that is very young. Very young. He's in his second year and he's already averaging 20. You can learn defense with experience, at least in my eyes.
A lot of people, especially in Devin Booker's rookie year, we're really comparing him to Klay Thompson. In my mind, though, Devin Booker has always reminded me a lot more of somebody like Bradley Beal. If you were to compare Devin Booker's game to another shooting guard in the league, who does he kind of remind you of?
That's a tough one. I kind of do like the Klay Thompson one, but Klay Thompson was already a hard-headed person on defense when he came out into the draft. Oh man, Devin Booker, who does he remind me of?
I will have to say, in my tweet, I compared him to James Harden, and people didn't like that.
How about currently, without maybe the dunking ability, I think he kind of a little bit like Zach LaVine, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, I would say that Devin Booker, he can dunk, though. He's dunked. There was a couple of games where Devin Booker did have a dunk, and it's always really nice to see when that happens. I think there was a couple of seasons ago when Kyle Korver dunked like once, and it really took over NBA Twitter. It was all over the Vines and everything. Speaking of Vines, didn't they say that they were going to be getting rid of Vines? I feel like I've seen some Vines popping around recently.
They're still,
am
you
I
can
wrong?
Still view them, but you can't make them anymore, I guess. Back to the Booker thing, man. He's ultra aggressive, though. So, I mean, if you think of somebody who's, you know, shooting, who's not shy, basically. I think he's averaging like 17 field goal attempts per game or something.
Yeah, which is the most of anybody in his draft
class.
Sure.
Yeah, I think I wrote that. Yeah, and he's definitely not gun shy.
Well, then, but you want a young guy and on a rebuilding team like this to be willing to let it fly and take those chances, right?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Especially, I mean, you got nothing to lose.
I mean,
you're at the bottom right now.
You want to teach good habits.
Exactly.
Something that's really popular right now, especially on some of the teams that are really struggling, and maybe to a certain extent some of the other teams that are just a piece away, but it's really the trade market. I was reading a lot of articles over the last couple of weeks, and really what stuck out to me with your article, Spencer, was that in a lot of the articles I was reading, obviously PJ Tucker was coming up a lot, Brandon Knight was coming up a lot in the trade rumors, as well as Tyson Chandler, but it sounds like Earl Watson really squashed those rumors of Tyson Chandler specifically on the trade market.
Yeah, no, he told me face to face, he said he's not going anywhere, and you know, some other outlets might want to pick that up and take it and use it for their own credit, but he's not going anywhere. Earl looked at me dead in the face and said he wanted to put the kibosh on that, and those are the exact words I used in the article. But he's like, man, I'm killing that right now. So Tyson's definitely not headed anywhere,
and I feel like that in general is just the NBA can't fathom that Chandler wouldn't want to go to a championship-esque team. I feel like the NBA wants that, you know, narrative so badly for veteran players to go for this that they can't fathom that Chandler is okay developing these guys and putting up, doing his rebounds and points while he's on the court.
What my favorite thing is, though, is when I asked him about the trade block and stuff like that, the way he handled it and said he takes it as a compliment. It means somebody wants you. It means you're still doing things the right way. So I think it's very professional and mature of him to handle it that way, for sure.
As far as other players that are available on the Suns, have you heard anything about anybody else in particular? Any rumors, anything that seems like it's maybe a bit more legit than just some clickbait sites might try and put out there so they can get
views on
the
web page? Well,
it seems
like the Cavs are linked to PJ Tucker almost every year. I think this is like the third straight year that he's been rumored to come over here. But I don't think the Cavs are looking for any more wings. But I think that Brandon Knight could be dealt somewhere because the difference between 2 years for him because of the emergence of Devin Booker, I think it's really hurt him. And he deserves to be on another team because he deserves playing time and he can score in bunches and get hot for anybody. So I think that he's kind of stuck in limbo there a little bit. Kind of reminds me of the situation when the Suns had Isaiah Thomas, Goran Dragic.
Oh, God. I got to tell you, every single time I see an Isaiah Thomas game recap.
Oh, I'm sure you do. You might have got rid of the wrong point guard, but That's for another story for another day.
And this, especially given his contract size, though, it wasn't just the it wasn't how good of a player Isaiah Thomas was. Is he was making like $8 million a year or something ridiculously small, you know? And then they essentially traded Isaiah Thomas for Brandon Knight in a roundabout kind of way, and paid Brandon Knight $15 million. And I don't think Brandon Knight is as good as a player. I do think that we aren't using Brandon Knight correctly. But even if all things being equal, you could have Isaiah Thomas at 8 or Brandon Knight at 15, and that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And I feel like it's got to be tough on Earl Watson, too, because as we were discussing earlier in the week, you know, the front office is going to have a different idea of what they want from the owner to the GM and to the coach. And Earl obviously wants to develop his players, but he also wants to win now. So he's got a tough decision in who to play with Alex Len and Tyson Chandler. And then you have Brandon Knight, Devin Booker. He's been developing Tyler Ulis as of late too, so it's really this mix that's really hard for him to figure out, you know.
Yeah, I understand some people are going to want to win, but at this point I feel like for the Suns the best thing to do would be to not get wins so that you can get a higher pick when it comes down to it. I feel like that might be the fans' approach to it, although maybe the front office may not agree and they may want some wins there as well.
Yeah, that's probably likely the situation, and you never want to be stuck in limbo. You don't want to be that that lottery team that's in like the 13th pick. You don't want that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what the Suns have been doing.
their entire,
know, the last couple of years. And it's really frustrating. And some of those picks have really turned around. I think a lot of Suns fans in particular are really high on TJ Warren. Much like the Phoenix Suns, Devin Booker, he has a lot of deficiencies on the offensive end. Speaking of the Suns going into the draft this year, it seems like a lot of their core pieces, you know, whether or not that is Devin Booker or Marquise Chris or TJ Warren, all have limited defensive abilities. As far as the type of player, how do you feel that the Suns should target a player going into this?
Well, they definitely need
draft
to improve their defense. They're 29th in the league right now, giving up over 111 a game. But they have been doing better defensively as of late. They think I threw a stat in one of my pieces was they had three games where they didn't allow more than like 111 or something. And then in the past like four games, they allowed under 100 or something. Marquise and Tyson can hold down the paint. And I think Marquise has been playing pretty solid defensively lately, at least.
And that's what I was going to say, at least coming in with Chris. That was kind of, they knew.
Oh, yeah. The first 2 months, it was a rough time for him. Draft a PJ Tucker type, to tell you the truth. You know, you want somebody who's hard-nosed defensively and, you know, isn't exactly that huge of an offensive threat, but somebody that can stop the ball. You know, one-on-one defense is huge. Somebody who's a great on-ball defender, I think that's your number one priority.
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist over...
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
The guy has so much value. Is the intro quote from the Drive Dish podcast on my end is actually about Michael Carter-Williams and just the value he brings on the defensive side of the ball, but he is such an offensive liability that it seems like the Hornets have had a really hard time figuring out lineups where they're rotating in Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and you know, when they do defensively, they're so much better. On the offensive end, though, you know, it really plummets. So there is a little bit of hesitancy to try and draft somebody solely on their defense. Now, with P.J. Tucker, though, he's in a contract year. I know that the Clippers offered a second-round pick for P.J. Tucker, and the Suns weren't too interested in a second-round pick, and I don't blame them for that. P.J. Tucker has so much value right now. If you're looking at the players he's guarded recently for the Suns, he guarded Dirk, Harrison Barnes, Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan, and LeBron James. I mean, for the most part, he can guard 1 through 4. He likes to say 1 through 5, but it's really 1 through 4. As far as the trade value on a P.J. Tucker, I forgot where I was going with that. I've heard some Suns fans floating around, and I don't know how likely it is, but if the Suns were to trade away a P.J. Tucker through this season, do you know any scenarios in the past where teams have traded away a player and then re-signed him at the end of the season?
Oh, man. I don't think it happens very often. as far as what PJ could net, I think a second round pick, like you said, with the Clippers, I think that's pretty fair value. Or, you know, maybe a young asset in return. It just depends on if he's a rental or if, you know, he'd end up staying wherever he gets sent.
I'm more of an outside, you know, fan looking in at the Suns in general. Would be if you're getting rid of PJ Tucker, but then at the end the goal is to then draft a player that's PJ Tucker-esque, I guess why wouldn't you keep him? Is it because he's the one you can probably get the most value for?
Probably. Probably. Okay. I mean, it depends on the situation, whether they want to get rid of him or not. I mean, it comes down probably to the coaching staff and how the front office feels about it. I always kind of find it a little bit perplexing. Eric Bledsoe's 27 already.
That's sort of an issue,
almost,
too. That
getting to his prime years, but then that slow decline is going to start probably around 29, 30 years old. And then you have this 20-year-old Devin Booker in the backcourt with him. You have 19-year-old Marquise Chris. At what point do you discuss something with Eric?
Well, that's a really good possibility, too. It looks like they're going to get a really high pick, and going into the draft, the top five picks all seem to be point guards. So if you are the Suns and you're looking at an Eric Bledsoe type situation where, like you were talking about, Spencer, he's 27, but all their young guns are 20, 21 years old. Alex Lynn, I think he's the oldest, but 23, I think 24 maybe. It might make a lot of sense from the Suns' perspective to try and deal an Eric Bledsoe, perhaps to the Kings, to finally get Eric Bledsoe to play with Boogie Cousins
and get them an actual point guard for the first time in 5 years.
Right, get an actual point guard. I was thinking of Ricky Rubio. So he's in the rumors right now, and I don't mean to put you on the spot about this, but do you know anything to the effect of how serious the rumors are about trading Ricky Rubio over to the Pistons in exchange for Reggie
Jackson? Stan Van Gundy actually came out and said that everyone's available, but he texted Reggie Jackson, said, "We're not trading you for Ricky Rubio." So that deal, I think, is dead.
That was such a weird situation. I remember seeing the report, and then 5 minutes after seeing the report, another report saying that Stan Van was like, "You're not going."
Right, and he legitimately just came out and said, I texted him, I said, "We're not."
Right, such a weird situation.
Well, it's also a little bit suspect, too, because all of a sudden when those reports came out, Ricky Rubio missed a game for quote-unquote personal reasons, but I think he injured his hip in the game before that. So it might have been partly due to injuries. But before we get you off the line here, Spencer, we had a listener on Twitter that three-guard rotation. He wanted us to ask you, do you miss Eddie Hurry? He says he's half-joking, half-serious, but the careers between Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry seem to be inextricably
linked. Eddie Curry, man. I'll tell you what, he had potential. He had real potential. It's just he couldn't keep his weight down.
Aren't we all in that situation?
Seriously, though. He had some times where he was pretty decent. We went over to New York. He wasn't too bad over there. But that's kind of funny that he brings up Eddie Curry.
So as far as 16 wins a ring, can you tell me a little bit about the site, how you got involved? Obviously, you have this article that we're talking about here. But apart from that, do you have anything else coming up as well to give you kind of a really broad
I'll tell you what, man. 16winsaring.com has really treated me very well. Sharon Brown actually got the attention of Adam and told him to bring me aboard because one of the old sites I wrote for was shutting down. So I asked him, I was like, can I come aboard? He said, for sure. So I asked him to just be, feature columnist, and three pieces so far, exclusives with Buddy Hield. The day after I did that, he was named the Rookie of the Month in December, so that was pretty cool. And then I did one with Robin Lopez, which is a really fun interview if you guys haven't gotten the chance to check that out. And then the most recent one with Tyson Chandler. But I've really enjoyed my time there, and it's really made me rediscover my passion and connecting with a lot of NBA fans on Twitter, and it's been a blast.
Before we move too far past Robin Lopez, I just want to ask you about his comments on Brook Lopez shooting the three and him saying that his three-point shot isn't game-ready, but if his brother can do it, he can. Do you think we will be seeing Robin Lopez shooting it from three this season?
He might pull it out against the Nets. Let's just say that. he's a man of his word, so I wouldn't exactly... I wouldn't call that a bluff. So
okay, all right.
In that game, I don't know if you watch it where the Nets scored 140 points.
Oh man, yeah, the Pelicans.
The Pelicans. Did you? I didn't watch that game, but did you watch it?
Can't explain that. It was a very wacky night in the association. That's all I'll say. D'Angelo Russell went down with a big injury that night. There were blowouts left and right. The Bulls got almost beaten by 30. I mean, their bench brought them back, but they got embarrassed.
Yeah, D-Wade was tweeting about that.
Yep. It was a very, very weird night in the association. That's all I can really explain there. 143 points from the Brooklyn Nets, who had one win coming in on the road, and they just blew out the Pelicans.
I need those guys to start winning some games, though, just for the Suns draft pick.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it must have just been like a full moon night or something like that. Just kind of
had to be.
Yeah, no, something was off. Something was unplugged.
Well, you can follow Spencer Davies on Twitter @SpenDavies. Spencer, thank you so much for your time today.
Appreciate it. Tim, Justin, thank you.
Three.
Job to the job, job to the job, 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 job.
Two.
Everything around us can be represented and understood through numbers.
One.
Begin. Stat drop on the Drive and Dish podcast.
Since we're talking about the Phoenix Suns, we thought we'd take some time to compare how they're doing this year as opposed to last year. Advanced stat time for all you stat nerds out there. At first glance, this year's team is better, at least by net rating. The offense has improved over last year's 102 net offensive rating to 106 this year. Unfortunately, the defense has gotten a little bit worse, falling from 109 last year to 111 this year. Both of those stats are per 100 possessions. Eric Bledsoe, he leads the team in win shares this year. Last year, it was Mirza Teletovic. Last year, the Suns were 18th in three-point percentage. This year, they're 24th, though that's pretty negligible because they're shooting around the same percentage where the league otherwise has overall improved. Rebounding this year, Tyson Chandler leads the way with 448 on the season. Alex Lynn is second with 293. Chandler is grabbing about twice as many boards per game as Alex Lynn. Although Alex Lynn's per 36 numbers show he's a little bit better of a scorer. The Suns have gotten even worse at sharing the ball this year, unfortunately. They're the worst league in the team, 30th overall and at 18 assists per game. Last year, they were 24th overall at 21 a game. And who is getting the most usage this year? This year, it is Eric Bledsoe and Devin Booker. They both lead the team in usage rate, both around 27%. This year, they also both lead the team in scoring, respectively. Last year, usage rate belonged to Bledsoe, Knight, and Markieff Morris. They all led the team in usage. Booker has obviously seen the most growth in that department, where Knight's taken the biggest hit. And standing pat overall and box plus minus, Eric Bledsoe led the team last year at 3.8, and he still leads the team this year at 4.2. Eric Bledsoe is the Suns' best player by nearly every single metric, and it's not even really that close. Overall, the Suns are a better team this year than they were last year, winning 32% of their games so far this season. 2015-2016, the Phoenix Suns had a 28% win percentage, and if it weren't for a few late-game tanking victories, they would have been even worse. And your stat drop for this week is none other than the Phoenix Suns.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.